This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. You're listening to The Showrunner, a podcast about podcasting that will teach you how to take your show from good to great. Ready? John, quick question for you. Do you watch House of Cards?
I watched season one and the first episode of season two.
Okay, so you did watch season one, though.
Yes.
So there's a reason why I'm asking you this. I've watched all the way through, really enjoy the show. But I was actually listening just this morning to an episode of Fresh Air, and they had Bo Willimon on, who is the showrunner for House of Cards. And he was sharing the story about the very first episode. So if you think back to the very first episode of House of Cards, our introduction to Frank Underwood is him basically killing a dog. Like, he strangles this dog and kills it. And it certainly sets up the utter ruthlessness of Frank Underwood. And so Bo Willimon is sharing the story about how they were really nervous about whether or not they should use that scene. Well, he wasn't nervous, and director David Fincher wasn't nervous, but a lot of people on the team were, and they said, hey, you can't show someone killing a dog. You're going to lose a bunch of your audience. People aren't going to like this. And Willimon said that he went to David Fincher, said, hey, do you have a problem with this? Fincher said, blank, no. And Willimon said, okay, well, blank it, and let's just do it. And his idea, it wasn't just kind of a flippant response either. His idea was, this is going to be kind of a ruthless show, and that's what this character is. And so if you weren't going to be able to survive this dog strangling, then the show probably isn't for you. And he termed it a litmus test moment. Basically, this moment where the audience that is watching, they can either opt out or they can opt into the show. And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, obviously, I like to show House of Cards, but I just thought that idea was very interesting and something that's important for people to think about. Like, I think, for example, we've kind of done that a little bit with the showrunner with, you know, hey, there's all these great benefits of podcasting, but there's also these challenges, you know, XYZ obstacles that you're going to face along the way. Like, here they are. Don't sugarcoat them. And there are probably some people who are like, well, I don't want to deal with all that. You know, maybe podcasting isn't for me. But those other people who, you know, look at that litmus test, decide to opt in, those are really the people that we want to speak to. So just curious to get your idea, as we kind of start out here this episode, your idea on this concept of giving your audience kind of that litmus test moment to opt in or opt out.
Yeah, definitely. I think in marketing, we often talk about like sort of finding your audience, but I think it's better to think about repelling the people that aren't into you, because those that are left standing. And I mean, when I started my show, Hack the Entrepreneur, I mean, it's just a picture of me standing in the subway in Tokyo taken by my daughter with a phone. It's not a very good picture. And it talks about me being a punk rock drummer. That right there sets the stage where lots of people instantly just, I don't want anything to do with a punk rock drummer. And then other people literally go straight to the contact page and email me about how they play drums or how they, and it's amazing. And I think it's very key. I think the way we're doing it with this show is that we're not trying to make it seem easy. We're not trying to make it seem like a lottery you can win and just make a whole bunch of money from podcasting really simply, because it's not like that. And I think we're doing the same thing where there are people that right at the beginning will just either be really into us or really not into us. And I think that that's what you need to build an audience that will really stand behind you and really be a true audience, not just a whole bunch of people kind of listening to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And fortunately, you don't have to kill a dog to do it, but you do want to kind of figure out what the proper litmus test is for your audience.
There are ways to do that. Exactly. Yeah. I really do think it is about trying to repel people, not trying to attract people, because the people left standing that haven't been repelled are really, really attracted to you.
Yeah. No. Great point. All right. Well, that's not the topic for today's show, but it was just, I was listening to it this morning while I was taking a shower, and it was very interesting. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it. All right. Let's get to the topic for this episode of The Showrunner. topic for this episode of The Showrunner is actually, what is a showrunner? We're going to get kind of meta here. And the reason, actually, the whole reason why I listened to that interview with Bo Willimon is because in the title of Fresh Air, it said House of Cards showrunner Bo Willimon. And I've become, I guess, conditioned to just see that term and kind of have a reaction to it, to spot it out there in the wild. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this topic today is there was another example of seeing it out in the wild that happened yesterday. I was having a Twitter conversation with Janice Henriksen, who works for Search Engine Journal, and she helps to put on their events that they've been doing, this series of live content events that they've been doing around the country. And she referred to herself as a showrunner. And, you know, and I loved it. I loved just kind of seeing it out there, and it wasn't in reference to someone who runs a TV show, which is where we often hear the term, and it wasn't in reference to someone who's running a podcast, like we talk about it on this show, but she still viewed herself as a showrunner. It made me think of kind of this bigger picture idea of what a showrunner is. And so I've obviously got my thoughts about it, and I was, you know, had the good fortune to talk about it on the new Rainmaker podcast a couple of weeks ago with Robert Bruce, but we haven't really talked about it here. And so I want to just spend this episode talking about what a showrunner is. What does that mean? You know, why did we name this show that? And what big picture idea are we trying to get across?
I honestly see showrunner as kind of being a producer of a show or of an experience, as you want to call it, right? Whether that's a TV show or whether that's a podcast, that I don't do all parts of my show. Some people do, but to me, that's being more of a podcaster and just doing all of it. And I don't. I'm more of the producer where, yes, I do the interviews, but I got somebody to do the intro music. I got somebody to do the outro music. I got somebody to do voiceovers for me. I have somebody who edits the show. I have somebody who decides on or helps me pick music that should go into transition pieces, because people are better at these things than I am. And I'm okay with that because it's my show and I am the showrunner of the show, but I don't have to be the person behind holding the camera, and I don't have to be the person necessarily directing. I don't have to be the person acting in front of the screen always. And to me, that's really what I see it is. It's taking myself more seriously and my position in it, basically being almost like a CEO of a business of a podcast. I don't have to do everything, and I shouldn't try, because if I do, I'm going to do things worse than, like, if you wouldn't want to see me designing artwork for my show, because it would have been terrible, right? I know I have to do those things. My editing was no good. My editing is so much better now that I've got somebody else to do it with my vision as a showrunner of what I think the experience should be. And then I get a professional to do that. And to me, that's what I see a showrunner as, is really being able to step back, have the big vision, and then put things and people into place, get those visions across in the proper way to my audience.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to describe it, this idea of kind of a producer who executes this vision, and it's not all you, right? So when I look at it, I really think, and I think the experience yesterday of seeing Janice say that really kind of crystallized it for me, is it's the person with ownership of an audience experience. You know, whether you're creating a podcast or a TV show or a live event, you're trying to craft a particular type of experience for an audience. And the showrunner is the person who has ownership of that. And there's a lot of responsibility and a lot of rewards that go with that. But it's your vision. And usually it's not, if it's obviously big enough in scale, it's not going to be something that you can do all your own. And so you may need to have talent who can perform on the show, or people that you're interviewing, or like you said, people who do the design, people who do the editing. So people who can help kind of fill in the gaps where you don't have strengths that still allow you to create that great experience for an audience without your weaknesses kind of pulling things down. And I think that kind of bigger picture idea, this is really, I think, as this podcast evolves, as the course evolves, this is really how we want the people who take this seriously to start to view themselves. It's not just as a podcaster, you know, not just someone who's creating a piece of audio content, but someone who's creating an audience experience over time. And just like Vince Gilligan did for Breaking Bad, and like Bo Willimon is for House of Cards, and like Janice and the Search Engine Journal folks are with their events, and like we are doing here, that audience experience over time. And I think that idea of the showrunner really encompasses the bigger picture of that, both in terms of vision, in terms of responsibilities, and in terms, I think, of how you should see yourself. So why would someone want to become a showrunner, John? I mean, as opposed to just kind of doing everything on your own and keeping it a little smaller in scale, why would someone want the added responsibility then of being a showrunner?
I think because, I mean, ultimately the reach is bigger, the final product is better, and you actually create an audience and an audience experience and a show out of it, not just a podcast that might not get heard by very many people. And I think it's a tough question, actually. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's how I did it. And I don't even know if I was completely conscious of the fact that I was doing it. But like, I mean, the most basic things like naming my show, I didn't name my show. I had people that I was talking to and bouncing ideas off of. I didn't come up with all the questions that people seem to really like in my interviews. I bounced ideas off people. And to me, that was Dan Harmon's, like, one of, like, I just love his writing on Community, the Harmontown podcast, mm-hmm. and brilliant writer. And he's like created a show, but he also brings in a ton of other writers also, because why wouldn't you, right? Why would he just be like, no, I'm the only one who can do this? Why would I be, just because I'm the one asking the questions, why would I think that I know the best questions to always ask? And to me, by bringing in outside information and bringing in more people and more information just in general, it allowed me to just make a way better show and a way better experience. And I think it's absolutely kind of key to the success of my show that I've had, is because I've freed up and I didn't want to just hold on to it and be like, it's all mine, I have to do it all myself. And I just brought in so many more brilliant people and smart people that could help me and bounce ideas off. And it made a better experience for my audience, and an audience I actually didn't even have at the time, but that it allowed me to build and build and build and build a bigger and bigger and bigger audience. And so I guess that's just how I see why I think it's so imperative to do it in that way, and to treat it like you're a showrunner and you're the producer of this show. You're not the sole person responsible for every single tiny aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think your responsibility is in making sure that overall vision gets executed and that the overall experience for the audience is what you want it to be, but more importantly, what the audience needs it to be. And that's how you use content to build a brand and to build a business. And so, you know, I do want to be careful here with this conversation, not to make it seem overwhelming. Like, we're not saying that you, when you go out to start a podcast as a showrunner, that you have to have all of these elements in place. But I do think, you know, because especially at first, you may be doing a lot of this stuff, and it's probably good to do a lot of the editing and these things so that you can learn them. But I think it's more that long-term vision. You know, I think a lot, we talked in the last episode about, you know, what makes podcasts fail. And I think a lot of times it's being a little bit too short-term in thinking. And I think inherent in the idea of a showrunner is long-term thinking and allowing a story, allowing an experience to evolve over time. And for that to really be, you know, a vision on a grand enough scale to kind of build a brand and build a business that will make it worthwhile, I think it's going to be important not to see everything as being something that you have to do, but really, you know, kind of like you said, you know, looking to evolve it and bring in other perspectives and create a team and do all of these things that truly create the rich kind of experience that'll make it worthwhile is not quite the right word, but that will help you execute that vision that you have in your head, because it's difficult to get something that's in your head, get it out there, really have it be worthwhile to a grand audience. But I think when you think of yourself as a showrunner, then it really helps you get a few steps forward toward executing that. talking about executing kind of leads us into the next question, which is, so what does it take to be a successful showrunner? Like, we kind of talked about what it is and why it's important, but what does it actually take to do it right, do you think?
Okay, can we just back up 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
Because the way you said that we don't want it to be seem like an overwhelming sort of task. And it's interesting when you say it like that, because I've never thought of it. And I think the reason why I did it the way I did it as a showrunner now, that the name is for it, is because it was easier. It was easier because I didn't have all the answers to all the questions. I listened to a ton of business podcasts and I knew where I needed to fit into the market, but I didn't know exactly, or I wasn't confident enough that I could do that all on my own. So I just started talking to people around me that also listen to podcasts in that market and that also I trust and are smart. And it's a value to just asking those people and being willing to just listen to their answers. And I really think that it's actually a lot easier because it's not just all you. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that's honestly why showrunner with a television show would obviously not try and do it all themselves because they couldn't. Nobody can. And I don't think that it should be made to think that it's a bigger task. It's actually easier. You're just opening up a way to get this vision you have or what you want to your audience to experience, and then just getting help from a community or something of people that will help you do that.
Yeah, no.
So I just wanted to clarify that because that's really the reason why I did it, was because I don't think I could have done it myself.
That's a great point.
I tried to make it easier.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I'm glad you backed it up because I think I agree with what you're saying. I think what I was trying to point out is more people who might be thinking, well, crap, I don't have the resources to, you know, get an editing team and pay for a logo and do all these things. So I'm thinking about it more from a resource perspective. Like, you know, like people don't have the backing at Rainmaker FM like we have to help us with the editing and the production side of it. So that's more, but I like what you said right there, which is that it's more about, you know, kind of a team feeling and creating a community where you can get help with ideas and that kind of thing, which doesn't necessarily cost anything. It's about time and humility.
Right. And like a logo, I mean, I didn't have any of Rainmaker when I started either. And I also edited my first 35 episodes myself because I didn't have a sponsor at that time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, my logo was $50. But I knew where to go and what to do and I knew what I wanted. I just couldn't do it myself, but it only cost me $50.
Yeah.
And then the editing was done myself and it took a long time. I wasn't that good at it, but I was good enough and I took the time because I knew it had to be of a certain level of quality. But I couldn't step it up to where a professional can now do it, but I still was good enough. And I did want to be hands-on to that part because it was my vision that I wanted to take forward. And I think it's also having this community around, which I had to a certain degree, I think is the reason why you and I decided that we want to, like in the initial launch of the course, we want to include a community for people so that you do have people to bounce ideas off of and to get a wider perspective on what it is you're doing and this show that you're trying to create, because not everybody has that already. But if we put that together for people and help them have that community around them, then they can become a showrunner just like that. And that resource is there for them, which I think is a super, super, super powerful thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So then what then does it take, do you think, to become a successful showrunner?
It takes authenticity and finding your voice.
Yeah.
And having that unique placement in the market, which is why I tell you to devour as many podcasts as you can for the month or two leading up to creating the idea of your show. Devour podcasts as much as you can in the market you want to hit, because every market out there still has giant wide gaps in it in the podcasting space. Not of shows that exist, because there's obviously thousands, but most of them never get found. I'm only worried about maybe the top 20 or the top 50. Find gaps in those and find out where you can uniquely hit that market. And I think that that's key.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you completely. I mean, you want to be authentic. You know, you need to have a voice. You've got to have that USP that separates what you're doing. And I think, you know, to add to that, you also, you want to make sure that what you're doing is useful. And that requires, you know, understanding what audience you're going for, understanding what that audience needs, what can help them, and then making sure that your content does that. And then sustainability, which I think is one that people sometimes overlook when it comes to being a successful showrunner. You know, the first season of Breaking Bad was great, but Vince Gilligan isn't a legendary showrunner if Breaking Bad ends after one season. You know, the the shows that truly leave an impact and that are remarkable are the ones that sustain. And they don't have to sustain forever, but they've certainly got to be there long enough to leave an imprint. And also part of that is being reliable, you know, being there when people expect you. And I think one that maybe people are hesitant to touch, and sometimes I think that we're even hesitant to talk about when it comes to creating content for an audience, is profitability. And that's important for a couple reasons. I mean, number one, first, I think it's take a bigger picture of profitability. I'm not just talking about monetary profitability, but that is important. I mean, you know, if you're out there creating a podcast and it's just a constant drain on your time and your resources, you may not be able to sustain it. And that removes one of those elements of success. And so you've got to have resources coming in to compensate for the resources going out that allow you to keep doing it. But it's also, I think, defining what that profitability is. So there's going to be that monetary, that resource part of it. But also, is it just profitable for you internally? You know, you've got to create something that's authentic, useful, and sustainable in whether it's podcasting or any type of media. You've really got to put a lot of yourself into it, a lot of your time, a lot of your heart, a lot of your energy. And if you're not getting that back, you know, and it's whatever that means to you. Maybe you're someone who's motivated by page views. Maybe you're somebody who's motivated by, you know, a single person who consumes a piece of your content and it helps them improve something and they email you and that fills you back up. Whatever that is, you know, you've got to have a net gain there to really keep it going. And so I think understanding that, understanding what that profitability needs to be for you is very important to keep you going. You know, in those rougher moments when you face those obstacles like we've talked about, what gets you back to the microphone? And so I think that all four of those things together, I think, are what allow you over time to create the kind of content, the kind of media property that will make a big impact on not just an audience, but on you too. And I think that's extremely important for your long-term success as a showrunner. So, do you have anything to add to that, John, before we move on to our listener question of the week?
No, but just, I would definitely just really hit home the sustainability and consistency, because I was just looking through my download records, and after my first 8 weeks when everything was going great, and then a couple weeks after where it still went really great, it drops off and you hit this huge massive dip that went on longer than I thought it did before I started to like jump up to downloads again. And I think if I would have paid attention more to it and been like, whoa, this is so long, where, but I just kept consistently putting out 3 times a week like I said I would and doing the best that I could. And then I got through that dip. And I think that that's really, really key, because that's where most shows just stop, because they think that they're never going to get through that dip. And as Seth Godin says, the longer and harder that dip is, the more rewarding it is on the other side. And now I've hit the other side and it's amazingly rewarding. But if I would have in any way thought about it too much during it, I would have definitely not been consistent and it wouldn't have been sustainable and I would have stopped. So I think that that's really something. Know that that is coming and you have to work through it. But the rewards on the other side are plentiful.
Hey, can I admit something to you that's kind of embarrassing? And will you promise that it doesn't go anywhere but just between us?
Perfect.
So on that last episode that we did, you talked about the dip with Seth Godin, and you know how I've been trying to incorporate music into the editing of this show. It was all I could do. Every time I listened back to the episode and heard you say the dip, remember that song? I didn't remember who it was by, but "When I Dip, You Dip, We Dip." You remember that song?
Oh, wow.
All I could think about was that song. I couldn't get it out of my head, and I even went so far as downloading the MP3 and putting it in the episode to hear how it would sound, because I don't know why. I just had this urge to put it in the episode, but ultimately I took it out and left it. But I felt the need to let you know that. I just wanted you to know that eventually good judgment won out and I didn't put it in there. But every time you say that, I cannot get that song out of my head.
And now two episodes in a row I've mentioned The Dip. It's really, it's impactful to me right now because I was going through creating videos for the course and I had to go through my stats and show some stuff. And I had not looked at it that closely.
Yeah.
And if I might have, I might have not been sustainable and consistent and just given up. But I didn't. And luckily, because I know what's on the other side now.
Well, just know that every time you do that, there's a cost. And it's me spending the rest of the day singing, "When I dip, you dip, we dip," to myself. So
every episode now, every episode. It's coming out.
Thank you. All right. Okay, let's move on to this week's question from our audience.
Excellent. This question came via Facebook to me from somebody named Joel Hiscott. He said, "Johnny, how important is it to have a keyword in the title of my show? My show is about travel, but I went with the title, Look Like a Local. I really like the title of the show. I think it perfectly describes what I'm trying to do. But did I shoot myself in the foot by not having the word travel in the title?" That is a good question.
That is a good question.
And I would love to hear what Jared has to say about it.
Well, I don't think you necessarily shot yourself in the foot by not having the word travel in the title, but I do think, and I base this on experience, you certainly could have improved your potential discovery by having it in the title. So I think I've used this example before, but when I launched the Assembly Call, I thought that was a really, really clever name because the arena that Indiana plays in is called Assembly Hall, and so that's where the name Assembly Call came from. It's kind of a play on Assembly Hall, and then it's a call because originally we did the show via Blog Talk Radio and then turned it into a podcast. I was like, oh, this is so clever. People are going to love it, and people did love it. But one day I went into iTunes and I was searching for Indiana Basketball Podcast, and there aren't that many of them, so I mean, it would have shown up, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I'm thinking, man, you know, where is my show? And I realized that just having the Assembly Call as the title and then not having a very good description, iTunes had no idea what this was about. And so I went in and I changed it to the Assembly Call IU post-game show and podcast, and then made sure that I used Indiana Basketball in the description. And magically, not really magically, but, you know, all of a sudden it appears. And so I think there's definitely something to having a clever, catchy title, and I think Look Like a Local is really good, and I think that'll certainly help. But we've also got to understand how powerful iTunes search is, and you just want to feed it the information that it needs to know what your show is about. Like we were talking about before we started the show that, you know, as we're recording this, I don't know if this will change by the time this episode airs, but the title of the showrunner in iTunes is simply The Showrunner. And we want to change that to, you know, something like The Showrunner, a podcast about podcasting or something, just to give iTunes a little bit of a better description for what this is about, so that if people search for podcasts about podcasting, we won't get overlooked and people will be able to find it.
Yes, and I absolutely 100% stand behind iTunes SEO, like search engine optimization. iTunes is the biggest search engine for podcasts in the world by far. 90% or more of your downloads will come through that. So make sure. But then there's something simpler, I think, because when Joel asked me this, my answer was like yours, which was no but. And the big but is, think about it. Be conscious next time you're looking through your podcast app or whatever app you use on your phone and you're looking for a new podcast and you're swiping by shows. Think of how quickly you're going by those shows. And to not have it, to me, it's way more important to be clear than it is to be clever. Be clever during your show if you want. Do all that. But make it very, very clear. When somebody's swiping by really fast, you have a split second to tell them and to catch their eye about what your show is about and why it would help them in some way. And I think Look Like a Local is a great maybe tagline, but not necessarily a great title because it doesn't do that for them. Although I get that that's what he's trying to... He wants to interview people locally, and so you can get a feel for the place before you go there, and you can look like a local. But that takes way too long to get that through your head. And so to me, it's way too clever and not clear enough. So my answer to him was maybe make a tagline that is super, super clear and actually mentions travel, which then, of course, has the flip side benefit, like you said, is the SEO. And when people are searching travel, then you'll actually pop up. But it also, as you swipe by, which most people are doing it on their phones now, not on their desktop computers, you have to be able to clearly state what it is you uniquely say and what you will do for the person if they decide to click and subscribe to your show. And I think that that's imperative to the success of being found amongst the millions and millions and millions of people on iTunes every single day.
Yep. I agree. And Joel, thank you very much for your question. And if you would like to ask us a question that we can address here on the Showrunner Podcast, there are two ways that you can do it. The number one way and the preferred way, which will get looked at first, is to leave your question as a review of the Showrunner on iTunes. We'd appreciate if you would drop us a rating while you're there too. So you can leave it there and we'll check those before every time we sit down to record to give those questions priority. And if you'd rather not do it that way, then you can send us a tweet as well at ShowrunnerFM with your question and we will gather those up there as well. But those are the ways to do it. And I think we've gotten a good response from this so far. So I think we will continue to do these questions. And plus I like them. I have fun. And it's always interesting to see what people are asking. Because obviously we want to answer the questions that are in your mind, so that's the best way for us to do it. With that said, we do want to make mention here as we close out that when this episode comes out, we will be right in the middle of the pilot launch of the Showrunner Podcasting course, which John, you and I are very excited about. We've been hard at work on, and we're so excited to get out there to everybody. And so as you listen to this, if you are interested in kind of getting a roadmap, getting a step-by-step guide for how you develop and launch and run a successful show and to become that showrunner like we've talked about in this episode, then go to showrunner.fm. You'll see right there a place to enter your email address and get on the list. And you want to do that, and you'll receive an opportunity to join the pilot program. It's not going to be open much longer. We're doing a very limited pilot launch initially so that we can get some people in, even get some feedback, make the course even better. So we will be re-releasing it at some point. But to get in on the pilot program, which has some specific perks to it that won't be available once we launch it in full, you don't want to hesitate. So go join the email list at showrunner.fm, and the rest of the information and instructions that you need will be provided there. Any thoughts on the course, John, as you continue creating the lessons and getting everything ready for the pilot launch?
I'm just really looking forward to getting it out. It's been months in the making. I've spent the last 8 months like 100% heads down and in the trenches of creating my podcast, literally from no audience to I'm pushing like 400,000 downloads now, which is amazing. Wow. To me. And so, yeah, exactly. And so I've been living this show for 8 months, and to now have to go back and piece it all together, how I did it, has been really enlightening and fun. And I know it's going to be really beneficial to a lot of people. Plus getting to, like we said, like the private group, and then also probably getting to look at some people's shows ourselves is going to be, I think it's going to be really rewarding, and it's going to be just a lot of fun. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to just getting the course out the door and getting people into this first launch.
Yeah, no, that's something I'm really excited about. I think you know the show reviews, actually being able to review people's shows individually, go over it with them, that's something we probably aren't going to be able to do once we launch it en masse. And then so that's one of those perks to joining the pilot program and kind of launching on a limited basis. But I'm really looking forward to that too. So, and just getting it out there, getting feedback and helping people with their shows. I mean, I know how much it's meant to me to to start shows and develop shows that have created an audience and really built something meaningful, not just to myself, but to other people. And so to be able to help people, you know, with that roadmap and help people avoid some of the mistakes that we made, I think it's going to be really rewarding. So looking forward to getting that out there. So again, go to shorerunner.fm and you will see all the information that you need to take the next step. All right, John, thank you for another great episode, and we will speak again next week.
We will. It's been fun.
All right, take care, everybody.